What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Al. Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 250. NASDAQ Futures down 4.25. It seems like our end of year or end of whatever you want to call it, new presidency, whatever you want to rally, you want to call it, is still intact. Do we have Professor Carl?
You do.
Why do we have you? How come you're not down at Mar-a-Lago with your nose up somebody's butt?
Oh, my God. Okay. So... Since you were crazy enough to ask that question,
I wasn't invited either, so I don't feel bad.
Well, you know, hey, we all have our faults, right?
Yeah.
So since you were nutty enough to ask that question last night, out came the infamous congressional COVID report.
Oh, God.
Uh-huh. So, of course... One of the things it does is praise the shots as having saved millions of lives, which, by the way, is a complete load of BS.
I do have to ask, because we both sort of agree on this. Did it help the older people in nursing homes and stuff? I think it probably did, didn't it?
It's a tougher... It is a really tough call there. Okay, so there is a subset of people where it's a tough call because every drug has adverse effects, and these are no different. It's just that these are this list is the horror show from Rocky Horror. Okay, the problem is when you're 90 years old in a nursing home. I mean, and this is one of the things I talked about at the time. The average tenure of, how much life do you have left when you go into a nursing home? It's like 6 months. Yeah, so the average person that goes into a nursing home, that's how long they have before they expire. So if you give them something that, let's say that 100% of the time you have a drug that in 2 years causes cancer. 100% of the time it's going to kill you. But... For that 2 year period before it kills you, it actually helps prevent something else that might kill you. Well, that might actually not be a bad deal if you're in a nursing home, right?
Well, I mean, some of those nursing homes just got devastated. I have if the vaccine was there earlier, I think it might help.
Well, I know.
So.
That's what I'm saying. Like, Kirkland, where which was one of the first places, right, where it hit was out in Washington State. And then this was called out in the report, the ones in New York where the governor forced people who were sick into them. Okay, basically contaminated the facility. In any sane world, if you did something like that, you'd be charged with mass manslaughter.
Well, I have some clients that own, the friends that own nursing homes. You know what group I'm talking about, and they had a guy that was they were so screwed up in some of the hospitals and nursing homes. I'm not into dragging people in the street, but boy, oh boy, somebody has to have some conscience problems. They had people at the nursing homes that moonlighted from the hospitals, and in some of the hospitals in New York and maybe other places, they had people in the COVID wards.
Oh, yeah.
With like 2 hours left on their shift doing rounds in like the cancer wards with the, right. with the germs on them and stuff.
Well, yeah, and these were people that were going into places that they knew had badly compromised individuals.
I don't think people had any idea. I mean, the stuff I remember from this, because, you were helping out on the show and so forth, stuff I remember, this was an amazingly tricky disease in the sense that, what do they say, Carl? 10% of the people infected 70% of the people or something. Some people were just incredible carriers and
yeah,
some weren't.
Well,
something was weird about the, I mean, the disease
was
weird.
Not an easy, you know, not an easy thing to figure out.
Well, these guys had, somebody showed up from the hospital. He would moonlight at the nursing home. And, you know, and the guy showed up in his hospital scrubs. He didn't even take them off.
Right.
And he went around and served dinner. And I think he infected 42 people in one night or something.
Yeah, I mean, there's this was one of the things, you know, but we also, the other thing that really, that you know, stuns me is that we knew, like, back all the way back to February and March when it first started, because we had that cruise ship out in Japan.
Yeah.
Diamond Princess, which, you know, cruises... When Sarah was younger, we used to like to do them because she could, with, you know, being a preteen, she could hang out pretty much, do whatever she wanted on the ship. She wasn't going anywhere. There was, you know, nothing bad was going to happen. You know, there was a camera around every corner. And at the same time, I could hang out and do what I wanted, and, you know, we could spend the time we wanted to together and, you know, do our own thing. It was a nice way to have a, you know, a, I mean, not a terribly cheap, but a reasonably priced vacation, right? And, but the thing is that, it, you know, when this thing started, I mean, if you look at the demographics on those things, it's about as bad as you get, all right?
Yeah.
For people that are ambulatory. I mean, they're all, you know, three quarters of the people on the ship are probably over 70 years old. And so, you know, and half of them are fat and diabetic. And, you know, so, I mean, all the horribles that, you know, that made you more susceptible. And yet, here we were with the ship, and yeah, you know, some people died, but I think the total count of people that actually whacked on that ship was only something like 40 or 50.
Yeah, it was nowhere near as bad as people.
Well, it was, I mean, there were, you know, there's 3,000 people on these ships, okay? And the other thing is that they did a seroprevalence run fairly early on, and they found that you know, like a quarter of the people, just you know, in the time that they had of, despite all the quarantine measures, everything else, it spread like wildfire through the ship anyway.
Yeah,
both for the people, you know, the guests and the crew, didn't make any difference. Now, as it turns out, you know, I figured out pretty quickly why that was happening, but you know, and then of course, oh no, it can't be that. Well, it, actually, yeah, it's in crap. And, oh, by the way, if you're eating, hello. I mean, it's the same reason that norovirus rips through those ships like crazy. And so it's very hard to control simply because of the density of people. Same thing happens, by the way, on naval vessels. You know, you got 3,000 people on an aircraft carrier or more.
Yeah, or more.
And when they first start out their deployment, everybody's biota, you know, all the different germs that they brought in from different places all get thrown into one great big petri dish, and it takes a while before everybody, you know, gets whatever bug the other guy has and gets over it.
Well, somewhere buried in the bowels of my emails, and I know you and I talked about it, God, how many years ago now, but there was a guy, and just about, this is the part that, well, I mean, you brought this up a million times, all the serious studies that were, I don't know, I guess I'll use the term unbiased, we're all from overseas. I had a guy in London who was sending me a bunch of stuff. He listened to the show. But this one was, I think it was in South Korea, Carl. I don't know if I mentioned this, but somehow or another, they spotted a guy. They knew he had just gotten infected. How they knew that, I have no idea. But they basically, I'll use the term, locked him up. They put him in a, you know, where he was staying. He was, you know, quarantined for 2 weeks or something. But they did every test imaginable to this kid.
Oh yeah.
And he. But it was the weirdest thing. And when I read this, it was very early on, and I'm sure I mentioned it on the show. Well, anyway, the kid, he had they started testing, you know, his breathing and all this other kind of stuff. Well, the day before he even knew he had a symptom, he was something like 20 times more liable to pass it to somebody else. What do you want to call it? Infectious. Then the amount of spores in just his regular breath was something like no other disease they ever saw, except maybe measles. And the guy, I said the kid never had a day where he wouldn't have gone and played basketball. He never...
Yeah.
I mean, so as soon as I heard that, I'm sitting there going, we got no chance with this. People don't even know they're sick. But and they're spreading this like wildfire. Now, he was one of those super spreader guys. But now, when I had it, I actually caught it at the hospital early. Went for a test, how crazy was that? With a mask on, of course, I catch it. I was supposed to have this procedure, not a real crazy one. And a guy calls me up and he goes, "No, you can't come in. You got COVID." So I talked to their major guy over there, North Shore, and he says, "Well, you didn't get it the day you walked in there. Give yourself 3-4 days, and you'll be fine. Go to work." And a solid pro. So I still wasn't sure I had it, Carl, because I really didn't feel I felt bad. That's why I needed a procedure in the first place. But I didn't even know I had it. So I call my doctor up and I say, "Hey, can you give me the antibody test?" He goes, "Sure, come on in." So about 6 days later, I went in, and sure they were blinking away.
Yep.
But then the question was, why couldn't I have helped out at a nursing home, which I should have? Why did I have to stay out of bars and restaurants? Why did I have to wear a mask? I was no danger to anybody.
But that was the narrative, Chief. You see, the narrative that you had to, that they had to pass around, right? And this was completely stupid, because back before we had antibiotics, if you got tuberculosis, you either fought it off or it killed you.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, once you fought it off, you were the only people who could work in the sanitarium and help other people that had tuberculosis, because you couldn't get it again, and you were safe. You also couldn't give it to the give something else, at least that, to the other people in there. So you could go into the place and then come back out and not spread it to everybody in the community, because you couldn't get it again. You'd already had it. You were immune. And the same thing is true with measles. You had the measles. You're not going to get the measles again. The same thing with chicken pox. Right? So. And then all of a sudden, out of the middle of nowhere, when this thing shows up, they play this. Oh, it doesn't work that way for this, because this is special.
Yeah.
This is a special disease. Well, you know what? Here we are in 2024. Okay, I got it. All right, and I got it pretty bad. Of course, being assaulted by 2,000 yellow jackets probably didn't help me. Just before I was exposed, all the way up until that point, I'd been licking doorknobs and absolutely nothing. I'd gotten nothing. And then I'm mowing the yard and run over a yellow jacket nest. And
they didn't like you.
No, they got very angry. I got very angry with them, though. I think there's probably 10 cans of Spectracide that got dumped down that hole.
Audrey got nailed, too, by someone. She must have had 15 stings, 20 stings.
Chief, I think I had to have been hit at least 200 or 300 times. I could count them. Okay,
how long were you still pulling stingers out? She was like a month.
Well, there were so many, I couldn't distinguish where a sting was.
Oh, God.
Okay, that's how bad it was. Like, all the way up my legs, on my back. It was everywhere. Yeah, of course, that does some ugly stuff to your immune system. Thank God I'm not allergic, or, I would have been dead.
Yeah, you'd have been toast.
Yeah, I would have been dead. So, but nonetheless, that really sucked. And so that's, but the thing is, here we are. It's 2024, okay. I didn't take any of the shots. I got the disease. All right. Well, and all these people that I know that have taken it, they've gotten it, 2, 3, 4 times. I haven't gotten it again.
No, I can't believe Matty Weber, our former producer, he gets it. He was not. He wasn't even. His wife got pretty sick, but he didn't. And like a week later, he gets the shot, and I go, "Matty, what are you doing? You're building your own antibodies. Why the hell would you go take a shot? Nobody would tell somebody to take a measles shot a week after you had the measles."
Well, the other thing that was really stupid was that the narrative that was running around was that that basically, if you got it, you can get it again, and there's the only way to be safe was to take the shot.
Yeah, yeah. Right? They're still telling you that.
Well, and I know factually that they're lying, and the reason I know is because for a while you were able to source the antibody tests from the UK. Okay, and before that I was able to get my hands on some because I know some people that run a biosciences lab, and even though they weren't FDA approved, you could get them for research purposes. So, a little research was being done. And, of course, you couldn't get one or two at a time. You had to order a decent number. But they were cheap. They were a couple dollars a piece. And, you know, it was a finger stick. Drop of blood, put it on the thing, and a little bit of diluent, and it's kind of like a pregnancy test. Worked exactly the same. The technology is exactly the same, except use blood instead of, you know, urine. And 2 years later, I'm still ringing strongly positive for antibodies.
Really?
Yeah. Now, at this point, I'm out of them. So, I mean, I don't know if I still ring positive.
Well, there was a guy in Britain who was doing the same thing. And I used to report it on the show. And he was like 10, 12 months into it. And then he stopped putting something out. I don't know if they silenced him or what. Hey, I want to question you a little bit because we got a, I think with Kenny today, we're probably going to talk a lot about our poor Art Cashin who died yesterday, huh?
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, nice guy. I do like the part where I guess he didn't use a credit card, right? And he goes, nobody has to know how many drinks I had, who I drank with, and what I had to drink. And he, you know what? I'm right with him on that. I, you know, it's not just drinking. Nobody needs to know what I do because I know people look at stuff on people, whatever. Anyway, but the Money Supply number that's also a month late now came out again, and we're still pushing this. We're right back to this 5% increase like we were before COVID,
yep.
and which is, you know, going to keep pushing this market up, which I believe it will unless something crazy happens. Is this, right now, is the Fed, this between presidency thing, they must be doing it for the new guy and the old. I mean, this is just what they do for rich people. I really don't, I mean, I'm getting so jaded. What is going on in Mar-a-Lago? Are these people going down there and cutting up the world or what? I mean, are they thinking?
Well,
they
you know, it's kind of, there's an interesting thing going on because, you know, Trudeau showed up down there, right? Sort of kind of unannounced. And now there are reports from people who were in the room, right? So, you know, it was the unofficial state dinner thing because, you know, we got a president-elect and we got an actual prime minister, right? So,
yep.
I mean, you know, we're in Mar-a-Lago is a nice place, so we could, you know, we get a real, you know, get some lobster out and get going, right? And apparently he came down there to complain about Trump threatening, you know, the 25% tariffs. And he says, you know, people will add this onto the price of things in America. He says, but it's going to screw our economy. It's going to total us. And Trump said, you know what? If a $100 billion trade imbalance between Canada and the United States going away screws your economy, maybe you guys ought to be the 51st state of the U.S. And you could be the governor.
This guy have any sort of, is there any filter between brain and mouth?
Well, you know, he actually has a point there, right? I mean, if
lunatics always have a point. I mean,
well, I'm just saying.
Not saying he's a lunatic, but what I'm saying is this constant bullying, like you would do with some guy who's painting your house. You know,
wait a minute. Now what he wants. All right, now, Chief, what he wants is eminently reasonable, okay, which is cut off the drugs and cut off the illegal immigration, okay? That's what he wants. The same thing he wants with Mexico. And by the way, the UN, to which, you know, we're a signatory to these things. So, you know, in theory, and by the way, so is Mexico, so is Canada, all right, says that if you're fleeing violence in your home country, which is a perfectly legitimate reason for you to take off, right? I mean, you know, you got a drug gang that's trying to shoot you or whatever have you. When you get to the first nation that no longer has those conditions, you must register for asylum there. You are not entitled to jurisdictionally shop for the best economic environment. That's not fleeing violence. That's moving around for economic advantage. That's not covered by the treaties. And all of these people that are doing this are playing the, oh, no, fingers in the ears. Nah, 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 nah. No, it doesn't work that way. All of that migration is not within the international boundaries of international law and international treaties.
I don't disagree, but this idea that the drug situation, I see it here in Chicago. There was a guy in a tent city over here across right out our window or in the Eisenhower Expressway.
Right.
And they had a guy every night pulling out one night. I see this guy on his bike, and he's running up the wrong way on the expressway on a bike. And I'm going, what the hell is this guy doing? Well, it turns out he pulls up right to the little concrete wall between where the tents were and the expressway, parks his bike, shinnies up over the thing, he's the drug guy.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's the guy. He's the guy with the dope. Yeah.
The thing that in Trump's playbook, and I know I'm going to piss everybody off here, but that really bothers the hell out of me is everything is somebody else's fault.
Oh yeah.
We've had a drug problem here for as long as I can remember, long before there were the immigrants. Mexico. The demand is here. Right. We can't go down. You go down the street in some of these neighborhoods, and the guy's standing right in the middle of the street, and like a. In an orange jacket, so you know who he is.
Yeah,
The problem is not. I mean, I have to get Eric back one of these days because he remember him. Eric's first job, I think it was his first job. He was a street reporter for, I don't know, it was the Washington Post, one of those places, and he was saying that Washington he covered like 2 murders a week, and all of a sudden. It's a long time ago, Carl. So what would have been Oxycontin or crystal meth, one of those new drugs. Yeah. It hits the streets, and within like a week, there's 15 murders. And then there was the cities where the distribution spot for a while was Jackson, Michigan, was, you know.
Right.
And then it was near you. Was it Memphis for a while, right?
Yeah, well, it's.
Whatever the distribution. Then those places got so violent, they'd moved to another spot. So these. Elizabeth, New Jersey was one for a while, where they had more murders than they had people damn near. The problem, and a lot of people maybe that we even know, or not we, but collectively people know, are involved in this trade.
Right.
Right. I mean, don't think the alderman doesn't know that these guys are selling drugs in his district. I mean, we don't want to stop it here. So you can blame the Mexicans and Canadians who you want, but this problem is ours.
Well, and nowadays one of the biggest issues that we have going on, and we have had for a while now, which is extremely serious, is that in order to make this stuff, you have to have the precursor chemicals. Okay, so these drugs just. This is not your dad's heroin that comes from an opium popping field in Afghanistan, right? This is all synthetic. And so the problem is those precursors are essentially all coming from China because making them in size is not something you do in a bathtub. Now, once you have the precursors making the other stuff, well...
I thought heroin came from a plant. What am I? How far behind the times am I?
Well, heroin comes from opium.
Yeah.
Which is, it's a plant. Okay. But fentanyl does not. Fentanyl is a synthetic chemical, and it works the same way. It's much stronger, but it's synthetic. It does not have a plant as its base.
Okay. I did not know that. Okay. Learn something every day.
Yeah. Right. So anyway, the precursor chemicals are being sourced from China. And one of the things... that when Trump was in office the first time, Xi told him that he was going to go after this and he was going to play Malaysia on the people that were making this stuff and exporting it. In other words, you get caught with it, your neck gets stretched. And he didn't do it, obviously, because the stuff didn't get cut off, right? So here we are, and then the precursors get shipped into Mexico. Mexico isn't doing anything about stopping it either. By the way, this stuff comes in such size that it is...
Wasn't that originally is considered something that would be help people get off heroin or something?
No, actually, fentanyl is a drug that has... It has legitimate uses, particularly in people that have some very horrible cancers that tend to produce a great deal of pain, especially towards the end. And it does have legitimate use. But nonetheless, just because it has legitimate use doesn't mean that it doesn't get abused like crazy, because it does. And so... this is one of the problems that we have, is that these things, they're coming in through trade routes. This is something that is absolutely stoppable, and it's also something that, since we know where it's coming from, we've traced the sources. They're coming out of China. This is the kind of thing that if you want a reason to go throw tariffs on somebody, okay, fine.
Well, I don't disagree with this at all. But we got a dash call. But
I'm just saying, we got an actuarial value.
But someday, somewhere, I get a little miffed, and you don't do this, none of the other guys on the show do, but I get a little miffed with somebody saying, you can't stop it. You know, when I drive down the street and I see a guy in an orange jacket selling drugs, if you pick him up, there'll be another guy there in 2 hours. You pick him up. At some point, somebody's going to get the idea that I don't want to be the next guy. I mean, we don't have the balls to do that. It doesn't appear.
Well, the other thing is, you know, you take the actuarial value of a human life, which, of course, you know, we do compute, right? I mean, that's a thing that we do. And then you take all the people who get killed by this, whatever, you know, 60,000 a year, whatever the number is in the United States, and you multiply that by the actuarial value of a human life, and you hit China with a tariff to cover every single penny of that.
Well, it's not just the human life. It's all the people that are in these tent cities
that
are on
that.
This stuff. So, they couldn't go to work tomorrow if their life depended on it.
Chief, I get it. So you calculate all this stuff up, and you say, okay, here is the price, and by the way, you're paying it. If you don't like it, that's too effing bad. We're going to revoke your most favored nation status.
If Trump can stop that stuff from getting here, I'm all for it. I'm rooting for everything good the guy's going to do. I really am. He's my president now, and he's in.
But I think
the idea that this isn't 80% our problem, though, is, I think, a little wrong.
Oh, no, but I think he can stop it if he's willing to do it.
But you're going to find out that it's still going to get here somehow. It's like the meth labs in the Ozarks, for God's sake.
Well,
anyway, if I don't see you in another 20 minutes, I'll see you on Friday. And we'll talk money supply and all the rest of the stuff. See if the market's going to go up every day till the end of the year or what, maybe.
Well, you know, it's Santa Claus time, right? So, I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to be short a lot of things but that $500 billion injection that Biden did on the way out the door trying to buy the election is going to hit.
Well, it's still happening. 5% money supply going up.
I get it. But you know what? That $500 billion bolus was not 5%. I mean, that's month over month. That's huge.
All right, but we'll talk about it on Friday. S&P futures up too. As if he was down, say, let's go to a quick break, Ricky, because I want to find out why Joel stuck that flag in the field on Saturday. We'll be right back.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Good morning.
Give us a call about your stock. 888-76-JOCKS. That's 888-765-6257. Or email us, stocksandjocks@live.com. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. S&P futures up 275. NASDAQ futures down 5. Very quiet morning here so far. Dow futures down 9. I don't really see anything moving here hardly at all. Matter of fact, I got Microsoft down a buck, but it was up yesterday. The Big 7 carried us yesterday pretty heavy. A lot of the other stocks were down, but the Big 7 was not. Get my machine to move here. The NASDAQ was up 185 yesterday. It's a full percent. S&P was up 14. Dow down 128, but you know, we don't pay much attention to Dow. Today, Europe up a little bit here. DAX up 25.1%. FTSE actually, they weren't up as much as the other guys yesterday. They're making up for that today. Up 61.7%. CAC around up 19.3%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 735, almost 2%. 39,248. These guys are following us here. Hang Seng up 196. That's a full 1%. Shanghai up 14.4%. And we're glee everywhere here, it looks like. 10-year bonds. 10-year rate up 2 basis points, 4.21. The Bund up 3 basis points, 2.06. Japan unchanged, 1.08. Oil up 93 cents, but still under 70 bucks, 69.03. Brent up 93 cents, 72.76. Natural gas down 5 cents, 3.15. I don't know why that is, Ricky, because it's cold outside. RBOB up 2 cents, 193. Gold up 450, 26.63. It was down a little yesterday. Silver up 44 cents. That's a big move, 1.5%. Copper up 4 cents, 4.17. Foreign exchange, Euro same, 105.1. The British pound same, 126.5. So not much movement there after the dollar has been strong. Crypto down 1,000. The Bitcoin, 94,818. So it was touching almost 100,000, but now it's back to under 95. So don't know exactly what that means. What do you got for us, Trevi? Weather sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:34 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 19 degrees right now with a high of 31. Very chilly with clouds and sunshine. Tonight will be partly cloudy and breezy with a low of 25 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 53 degrees right now with a high of 82. Mostly sunny and warm with the temperature breaking the record of 81 set in 1940. Tonight will be partly cloudy with a low of 50 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago, Iman Kennedy from Monroe is looking at 26 minutes. 43 minutes, Iman Edens from Lane Cook. Iman Eisenhower from Wolf, we got 26 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 25 minutes. Lastly, Stevenson from 24 to the Dan Ryan, 26 minutes. Let's go to sports. NFL Week 14 is on the way. Thursday, December 5th, we got Packers at Lions at 7:15 p.m. This Sunday, December 8th, we have Seahawks at Cardinals at 3:05 p.m. And we have the Bears at the 49ers at 3:25 p.m. NBA, yesterday, the Bulls beat the Nets 128-102. That's good. Today, we got the Spurs at Suns at 8 p.m. Lastly, NHL, I didn't have anything for NHL. You got to check back in the, in about an hour. Well, back over to you, Chief.
The Hawks got their ass kicked.
Oh, yeah?
4-1, I think. So.
Well, there you go.
My bad. All they do is lose. Do we have Joel? You, Chief. Joel, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, Chief. Good morning, good morning, good morning from the Motor City.
So why did you decide to put that flag in the ground?
You know, because Michigan people, and we're just so obnoxious that we have to do everything possible to upset as many people as possible at all times.
Well, there's an admission. God.
Hey, they don't call us arrogant asses for nothing.
Well, I didn't know they did call you that, but I guess they do.
The Michigan State coach, I believe it was 1978, actually, they pulled a big upset. Actually, their wide receiver was number 23. You remember him from one of the most historic home runs in the history of the World Series. Kirk Gibson was their wide receiver.
Really? Wow.
Yep, and they upset us. I believe Eddie Smith was their quarterback, and yes, I was at that game. But, Chief, I'm as surprised as anybody. I mean, I would say, the biggest upset in the history of the rivalry probably compares to 1969 when Ohio State was, I believe, riding a 20-game winning streak. They were coming off a national championship the prior year. And they were slightly less favorites over Michigan. Bo's first year, they came in and defeated the Ohio State Buckeyes. And there was a famous announcer from Michigan who actually passed away when I was in school. His name was Bob Ufer. Have you ever heard of that name?
Yeah, not Euchre, but Ufer, yeah.
Ufer, yeah. And he coined the term that will forever be set in my mind. Do you remember what other two events happened in 1969, Chief? I know you're around my age, but three major things happened. Four, if you include Michigan, but two were sports related.
Well, the Cubs.
And then one,
the Cubs.
I would call what?
The 69 Mets.
Yep. And you know what else was the sports related?
I'll never forget that one. That's for sure. It was my team.
Okay. And you know what else happened that year?
Wasn't that Joe Namath? Was it?
Yeah, it was. Yep.
Wow.
From the Mets to the Jets to the man on the moon.
Yeah.
We put a man on the moon that year. It's Michigan 24, Ohio State 12.
Well, the one I wanted to ask you is, well, did you ever think, did the security people ever think they were going to have to use the pepper spray on the players?
No. No. I mean, maybe the fans?
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe the fans, but you don't like to see that kind of, you don't like to see that kind of
stuff. Well, the Michigan coach came and he was being interviewed. And he had the guy number 55 or 56, the guard. He was saying, I love this guy. And he
goes, defensive lineman, first round draft choice, Mason Graham.
And he goes, talk to this guy. And then the coach took off. Did he go into the locker room before all this even happened?
No, I think he just, no, he was out there. He was out there to try and break up the
fight. How come nobody listens to the coach anymore, do they?
delivery. No, no. It was... Did you watch the game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
was that the most obnoxious? I mean, I don't like to be critical of announcers, right? Because, you know, what we do, we're kind of announcers. But Gus Johnson, I mean, come on. Could he have been any more anti-Michigan?
Well, who was the guy after the game who said they should fire the coach at Ohio State? Who's that guy?
Was that Joel Klatt?
The black guy on the left of the four. Of the four people that's sitting down at the table.
Oh. Was it Urban Meyer?
No, they got... You know, the four goofballs after the game? The guy on the left goes, oh, you got to fire this guy. He's got the $20 million team, and he lost. I'm going, wow, that's a little harsh.
I think so. Well, you know, you lose. It's just amazing. You know, 4 years in a row. You know, maybe the other 3 years, you know, they were maybe not as surprised. But, yeah, and I know we're doing a lot of jocks today, but our basketball team is perking up too. Big game on the road tonight, though. This is going to be a little bit of a test. We're going on the road to play those pesky Wisconsin Badgers.
Did you guys get invited in these million-dollar tournaments like the Irish did?
No, because we were eight. We talked about this last week. We were 8-24 last year.
Irish weren't very good either, but he supposedly had the number one recruiting class, so it's a three-year deal for the tournament.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So I have a question for you, Mr. Sport. When they find Michigan and Ohio State, how close are we, since all these kids are getting paid, of finding the kids themselves? I think we're right there.
$100,000. I mean, that's really going to hurt the Michigan and Ohio State.
Yeah, I think they should have fined every one of those players $10,000. They're all getting paid.
Ah, boy, oh boy. I mean, it's probably not a bad idea.
We're close, y'all. We're close.
Okay. All right, you want to talk markets?
Yeah, what are you making of all this?
Man, Chief, it's just we're just creeping higher. You know, when there's no resistance, there's no resistance, right? So that's where we're at. Also, we're coming into seasonality here, right? The Santa Claus rally. People were complaining about the narrow breadth in the market. Now you have the IWM, you know, finally back to the levels that it was in late 2021. Boy, oh boy, I mean, maybe a little wrinkle if, you know, the inflation data is a little bit hot coming up next week. But, you know, at this time, I mean, you know, it's the bulls are in strong command here coming up. You know, the Trump stocks are reacting well. He got behind Bitcoin, stalling a little bit on 100K. You know, people are out there shopping, record Black Monday or Black Friday, Cyber Monday, and what do they call it? Tonic Tuesday? What did they have?
There's some name for it. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
I wonder how much can you push? I mean, the money supply is going back up again, so that's mm-hmm. going right in the market. I mean, can we just double from here with a regular person feeling none of it? I mean, at some point. You would think, and I don't think it's yet, but, you know, it's funny, though, when you mention seasonality, when somebody says, well, gee, we're supposed to go up in December, or November, December, it sort of implies we kind of went down before that, but we never do. It just keeps adding on, right?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting. I mean, I don't know what kind of, you know, year-end tax selling. I mean, there are some losses. I mean, there's definitely, you know, some stocks that haven't participated. But, you know, just overall, you know, back-to-back years, S&P up 20%. Who would have thought it?
Yeah, I don't, it's crazy stuff. I certainly don't want the market to go down. My clients are doing very well. There's always something. I mean, how high can PEs go? You see this thing yesterday, and you see the stocks, all the people who were down at Mar-a-Lago, stocks are all to the moon. I mean, are we carving the country up? What are we doing? I mean, I don't know. You know, I mean, this Elon Musk, when he's got 11 kids and it's been Thanksgiving with any one of them, he's down Mar-a-Lago with Trump. I mean, what is this world looking like, Joel? It just looks weird to me. I'm not saying it's not going to end up being good. I'm not saying it, you know.
You know what? I thought I was the only one that had that thought. But, you know...
No, I don't think so.
Things will be interesting, Chief. But, you know, looking forward to an interesting... How about that? Is
yeah,
that
well,
a good way to put it?
Interesting. So if you guys get yourself a good... I'm curious. Allegedly, the people of Miss Vegas thing, I know I'm skipping around here, are contributing $1 million to the NIL of the teams that were there. Who decides who gets what? I am. This is one of the most fascinating things. This is like when stuff got deregulated in 1973. This is a whole new world, this stuff. And economically, there's got to be how many PhDs in this, PhD thesis in this? Who at Notre Dame decides which NIL gets the money without being part of the NIL? I mean, with his alleged hands-off relationship. This is bizarre, isn't it?
And you know what? It's only getting started.
Or it's about to blow up, one or the other. I do wish that the Irish would have gotten that kicker you guys got. Guy, is he good?
Yeah.
The guy from Arkansas State?
Yeah. Yeah, that's one thing they did pull out of the portal. Yeah, he's... boy, I mean, that 56-yarder he hit, I mean, it looked like it would have been good from 76.
Oh, he's got to be somebody's one or two-round pick.
Yeah.
Anyway, Joel, have a good one, buddy.
Want
to go right to Kenny?
We should take a quick break because I don't see him
yet. Okay, if you don't see him, well, maybe Carl can back in.
Kenny's here.
He's here? Kenny, you with us?
I'm here.
How are you, bud?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I have a feeling he was a friend of yours, Art Cashin.
Yeah, you know, it is the end of an era. He was a friend of mine. I've known Art for 40 years, right? I spent 40 years on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, actually 42 years now. But he was a legend, as you would expect. You know, everybody knows Art Cashin. Everybody would see him, whether it was on CNBC or on, you know, on a special news program. He was really a legend down there, as we know. And so, yeah, it's a sad moment for a lot of people that knew him. But it is what it is, right? He was 83 years old. He had not been well in the last couple of years. Took a turn for the worse after COVID and just kind of faded away. And yesterday was the end.
Yeah, I like the part about the no credit cards. I don't care. Nobody needs to know what I drank, how many I drank, or where I was. I love it. You know, I agree with that 100%, by the way.
100%. And he used to go, you know, we'd start upstairs in a luncheon club after work, and then they'd go across the street to Bobby Vann's or whatever. I think it was Bobby Vann's, yeah. And he had his seat. Everyone knew it. When you walked in, that was Art's seat. Nobody sat on it. And that's just what it was. He would hold court there nearly every night. You know, I mean, he had a very interesting life. He was born in Jersey City. He lived in Jersey City his whole life. I think the house he lived in was actually a house that he bought from a family member, and that's where he raised his kids. That's where he lived, and that's where he died. And you know, it was you know, he had kind of a tough life with his wife had gotten sick. He lost a child. So you know, it was marked by very, very trying times, but he was just the salt of the earth. He was such a great guy, entertaining and knowledgeable, and just just one of those people you could always go to if you had a question or a concern or something about the markets that you needed to discuss.
Well, now none of these guys, and I guess I'm including you. It was a different world than I was in, where virtually everybody on the floor was a trader. In New York, everybody just did, except for the specialists. There were no traders left, were there, when you were there? Or was a couple guys?
Interesting. So I was an institutional broker, right?
Right.
So I was trading my own account. I was representing the interests of my clients that were
right.
all in.
But I'm saying there were no, quote, market makers except for the specialists.
No. And there were a handful of guys that were just traders. So they did not manage or handle any outside business. They could not be in a crowd managing an order for a client as well as trading for themselves. So they were one or the other. But there were a handful. There might have been three or four guys max that would walk around and trade their own account on the floor. But they were very small. They weren't big guys. They'd go in and they'd buy, you know, 500 shares or 1,000 shares, and they'd trade it like that. But they were you know, insignificant in the sense that they weren't coming in and trading hundreds of millions of dollars worth of stock or anything. And they were held to a very, you know, they had to play by a very strict set of rules. And so they were not impactful in terms of how stocks traded, but there were a handful of guys down there, you know, no more, not today. No, not today at all. Because the guys don't exist, right? No one exists anymore.
Well, they pretty much kicked them out, right? I mean, there was no, at some point the, you couldn't compete with the specialist. Specialist had the, it was his game.
Correct. You had to, well, there were certainly rules on how you could trade, who you could split stock with or you want. If I walked into the crowd and I wanted, you know, it was a $25 bid and I went in and I bid 20, if the special was bidding $25 and I went and bid at $25, it was really my bid because I was representing, you know, an institution. If he said to me, I'd like to buy stock at 25 as well, it was my choice to say no or yes. You know, I could either let him buy, if it traded at 25, I could split stock with him, or I could buy the bigger portion and I would let him buy some, or I could say, nope, sorry, it's my bid, that's it. And then I'd get, and he couldn't, right? Conversely, if I was a seller, it would be the same thing, right? So there were a bunch of rules that, you know, everyone respected and played by.
Well, I think the competing system, at least in options, I thought was a lot better. I mean, that's one of the reasons why the CBOE was formed, is a lot of people didn't like the specialist system. Of course, the options ended up being the specialist system, but right. You know, it's kind of another story. But what do you make of this constant? The Fed, you know, despite the politics of it or whatever, seems to be right back on this 5.1% gain, like we've been doing for 25 years, and just pumping up the world and leaving 80% of the population behind. Is this just for grin, just there? Because you were coming on, You know what a base Chevy pickup is now?
I'm gonna guess it's $80,000.
No, the base, just of your basic, you know, the one front seat, you know, not even power windows and stuff. It's like $42,000. That's a lot.
Right.
But hell, that's incredible. But if you do anything with it, it's gonna be 60. I mean, put anything in there.
Yeah. Can you imagine a Chevy Grand if it was well equipped? It's going to be $80,000.
Oh, easy. Oh, yeah.
Easily.
I mean, I wonder what, you know, we've really, is the people on the show here, Bert, man, maybe we're a little older, we see stuff, but the entire world has changed for people growing up now. The idea of having a new car, maybe a house. I mean, what's going to happen 20 years from now when nobody ever has a new car and nobody owns a house? I mean,
well, you know, it's very interesting. I'm not sure that, you know, 20 years from now that people are going to own cars, right? Why, the way the world is going, why would anyone own a car? Pretty soon there's going to be a car, you know, a carless driver that's going to come at the beckon of my call. Come pick me up, take me here, take me there. They don't have to own a car. They're just going to just have this autonomous driving vehicle that's going to take them around, right? Probably owned by somebody else, and it'll be a subscription service. You pay monthly for access to this car to come and take you wherever you want to go.
How
it'd be crazy.
When people look at like the future like that, and it looks like it, how do you contrast that with you know, one of the guys on the show, you probably listen to him, you know, Carl Denninger, who's been involved in computers his whole life, not that, you know, other people haven't. But there's never been anything anybody's done that allows the computers, because the problem with the computer is, and they've had these tests and they've tried to do this, you know, driving cars, you're driving down the street, you don't notice the canary in the tree where the car will. And if it's got it has way more piece of information than your eyes can see.
Yeah, I agree.
Yet it has no ability to order them in terms of which is the most important. Unless it's programmed specifically for it, every scene is going to be different. And there's been never any computer, except for maybe Hal in the movie, that can actually sit there and go, oh, no, this is the most important and the other thing. I mean, it's never happened. That's why these guys, every time they bring these things out there, I really thought, Kenny, not that you need to hear this, but I thought we would have, when I say driverless cars, I thought that maybe tractor-trailer units, when they hopped on I-80, there'd be something in the street and something in the unit where the guy could doze off, and it would keep him in the lane the whole time. I never dreamed people were going to start in downtown traffic. I mean, I can't. But yet, that's what they're trying to do. It's crazy, isn't it?
I gotta make you laugh. Now, I live here in Florida. There's not autonomous driving vehicles where I live, so I don't get any exposure to it. But I was out at the Schwab conference, which is out in San Francisco, 2 weeks ago, or last week, whenever it was. And it was the first time in my life I saw these autonomous taxis that were driving up, and I was walking down the street. Suddenly, these four people, I could see them on the phone. They're calling a taxi. Suddenly, this driverless car pulls up, right? The four of them get in, and I actually look through the window. There's nobody sitting in the driver's seat, yet these four people get in this car, and then this car was outfitted. There were cameras all over it, actually cameras built on the side of it with a radar thing on the top that was spinning around, all that stuff. The car literally pulled out into the traffic, makes a right, goes down the street. I'm sitting there laughing to myself going, I can't believe it. Now, it's been going on out there in San Francisco for a while, so I guess it's no big deal, but I had never seen it before.
Would you get in one? I'm not so sure I would.
I wouldn't either. I just said the same thing. I'm not getting in a frigging car with nobody behind the wheel. Now, listen, maybe they said that at first, too, out in San Francisco. People go, I'm not doing it, but then suddenly they try it, and they like it, and it's not so bad, and they can sit in the car, and they don't have to talk to anybody, and, you know, they don't have to talk to a driver. They can just do what they want. I never did it. I wouldn't get into a car without a driver, but that's me.
Yeah, but here's the problem, Kenny. I want to talk to the driver. I love talking to people.
So it must be our generation. I love talking
to people. You know, it is so weird. When you think you make progress, and you read stuff, I mean, we have more stuff to talk about at the market here, but when you read stuff about, you know, like history, I was reading something about a year ago where some guy was a Speaker of the House, God knows when, the 50s or something.
Yeah.
And he had something like 10 or 15, maybe not even that many, essentially, I don't want to use the term, but middle-aged ladies from Washington.
Yeah.
That were his people in there. With regular typewriters, with, you know, mimeograph machines, and they put through... However many bills in a session,
yeah,
and they spun forward like 40 years later, 50 or 60 years later, the speaker's got three times as many people, nothing but computers, and they produce like half the stuff.
I hear you.
Wonder where all this progress is. I mean, we've got all kinds of cell phones, and our kids can't multiply. I mean, where are we going with this?
Can't multiply. And listen, I want to laugh when you just said mimeograph. I wonder how many people listening to this right now have no idea what a mimeograph machine was, right? You remember when they did that in school and they put it through that mimeograph, and when it first came out, how it had that smell, right?
Every kid in class would put it up to his head and start deep breathing the thing, and the teacher would be like, hey, cut it out.
You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
A blast from the past. And you just said mimeograph, and I burst out laughing because I'm thinking, like, I can see myself in third grade when the teacher passed out the mimeograph papers and everyone put it right up to their nose to smell.
Well, I mean, I worked at Pullman and at Allied Van Lines, and everybody had a secretary, right? But the ladies all got along. and if somebody had a big report one of their bosses had to do, they all met in the coffee room, and you come back, and they all got a piece. They're all typing. They're all helping each other out. I mean, there was – I'm not saying it was better. I mean, clearly, I couldn't run a typewriter, for God's sake, and I could do a half-assed job on a computer. But, I mean, it's not like we think we're that much more efficient, but we're really not.
No. Well, I'm not so sure we're not efficient. I think certainly we have become more efficient. I absolutely do think we've become more efficient. The things we can do, you know, how – The speed at which we can do things now is certainly so much different than it was.
Right? Well, just looking up facts on the internet is way better than walking down to the library, for God's sake.
Well, 100%, right? 100%. And, all that stuff, and whether even multiple, even mathematical formulas, all that stuff, you know, so much of that stuff becomes easier. Although, the sad part is, you don't know how to do it. You know, you and I know how to do it because we were taught how to do it.
Yeah.
Kids aren't taught how to do it because the computer does it. Just put it in the computer. Let the computer do it.
But there's a certain amount of brain development that happens.
100%.
Which I think you can't sort of lose. But we're putting money back in the system. People are happy. Obviously, anybody who goes down to see Trump, the stock's up 3% like yesterday. I mean, we've got this kind of bizarre world going on, and I think it'll settle down into something normal. I honestly do. I really hope it does. But, I mean, I don't know that you know, 40% a year in the market, I mean, is Walmart going to trade it at a, you know, 100 times? Have we reached the point where it's going to be 30 stocks and that's it?
I'm not sure we've reached the point that it's only going to be 30 stocks, but I do agree with you that I think I'm still in the camp that we're way overextended. That, you know, the market, the momentum, guys, and the euphoria is just continues to be overextended. Now, look, AI is changing the world. A lot of this driven by the technology names, for sure. Look, yesterday tech was the only sector that was up. Everything else kind of got was under pressure. Not that it got whacked, but it was under pressure. Right. And you saw that when you looked at the equal weight S&P, which gives everything in the S&P an equal weight. And that was down, yet the NASDAQ was up and the S&P was up because the S&P is a capitalization weighted index. And so all the tech names in the S&P gave the S&P strength. But when you do the equal weight, you can see how they get neutered. Right. So therefore, you can get a broader sense of what's happening in the market. And so, I think we're overextended. I think we got to pull back a little bit. I think there's got to be, kind of this realization. But I do think that the world has changed. And I think the technology has changed it, will continue to change it. What you can do in AI today, the things that it can do, the things you can talk to it like you and I are having a conversation and it responds to you. I was at that Charles Schwab conference and there was a presentation on AI. And it was amazing to me to hear how these three, tech gurus that are up there talking about AI and what they can do. It's amazing to me what people are using it for. This one woman got up there and said, people are using AI as a therapist, right? They dial into this AI and they talk about their feelings. They talk about, they're depressed or they're this, and the computer talks back to them as a therapist would. It's crazy to me, but yet it is what it is.
Boy, if you were doing that, could I hack in and tell you to do the wrong stuff?
And that's the other thing I said. Here you are. People are revealing or they're talking to it like a therapist into AI. So where is that information stored? How is it stored? Is it stored on a cloud? You can't tell me.
I don't know where you're at. Kenny, I think you need to go play golf, but don't aim at the hole. Aim at the water just so you can deal with your stress. You're out there wigging balls in the water going, what the hell kind of advice is this? God. Can you imagine if somebody could hack into that? Oh man!
Can you imagine? That's I can't even imagine. Just wait until that happens. Can you just imagine the lawsuit? Oh my!
It is. Oh god! But you had a nice time at the Schwab thing, eh?
It was a great conference. It was. They always do a great. They always do a great job with that conference. It was big. It was massive. And we went to this place. It was at the Moscone Center in San Francisco, which I had never been to. That place is just massive. But they had a 3-day conference there. Their presentations were great. The AI one, I thought, like I told you, the AI one I thought was just amazing. I was just sitting there watching it as the guy was up there demonstrating the different ways you can talk to it, how it answers, how you can talk to it, how you can, further qualify it by having this ongoing conversation with it. But yes, I thought the conference was great. I did some media when I was out there on Yahoo and on the Schwab television intranet station, and so it was great. Yeah, no problem.
Well, good for you. I just somewhere whenever the market does this, I looked at the Buffett indicator and it's higher than it was in 2000, right?
Yeah.
I mean, some of this stuff. I love to see a bull market. My guys are making money. I just wonder. I don't see Microsoft doubling here.
100%. I love it. People go, well, you know, are you upset the market's rallying? Of course not. I love the fact the market's, I'm making money. My clients are making money. I think it's great. But I'm also not dumb enough to think that this party's going to come to an end. And I don't mean come to an end like we're going to have a 50% market correction. I just mean this every day the market creeps higher and higher and higher. It's got to stop and it's got to correct. It's got to pull back. You want to see it pull back. I keep saying if we see a 5 or 8% correction, that'd be great. It would shake the branch a little bit. It would get people refocused. But the fact that it keeps going up and up, you got the shorts that are thrown in the towel now because they keep getting burnt every day.
Oh, yeah, every day.
Getting burnt. So that adds more momentum to the upside.
But why, Kenny, do you, and I feel sort of the same way, and I keep questioning my, well, that's, You and I manage money for people. That's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to ask the tough questions, right? That's why they pay us. When you say a 5 to 8% correction, why does it have to be there? Why didn't somebody look at Walmart and say, "Wow, 36 times earnings, that could be 18"? I mean, like it always has been.
Well, I'm talking about a 5 to 8% correction in the broad market, which means that you're going to have other names that are down 10, 12, 15%, right?
Well, I mean, Microsoft, if they're anywhere near their historical, the stock could be, what, 280?
Yeah.
I mean, we're not talking about a few bucks down if we go back to any kind of normal ratings here.
Right.
I mean, I hope we don't. I mean, I really don't. I'd love to see the economy just grow into it.
And it very well may.
It may very well may.
So if these policies that the new administration wants to implement, less regulation, and we get real economic growth, then we may grow into it. I hope, like you, I hope that is how this story plays out. But, you know, it's too early to tell at the moment.
Well, it's hard to, you know, the thing of it is the different themes I'm getting from the entire, I mean, how many themes do you get from this guy? All kinds of them. I think the regulation piece is going to help.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it did last time, actually.
Yeah.
But the idea that, you know, you have to almost be a favorite to get somewhere, it troubles me a lot.
You know, yeah.
I mean, it really does. I mean, what exactly is this guy Musk's role? I mean, I don't trust the guy at all. I mean, I never liked him. And what exactly is he?
I mean, well, that's interesting. You know, it's funny. I don't own Tesla. I was never a Tesla. I just never got on that move. But I will say, let's be honest, he's a genius. I mean, look at what he's done, whether it's SpaceX, whether it's robotics, whether it's whether it's large language models, whether it's electric vehicles, batteries, whatever you want. You can't take that away from the guy. He is a genius.
Okay. I mean, I don't trust a lot of geniuses.
No, okay, and that's fine. But, so I don't know yet, right? We don't know yet what that's really going to look like in terms of were you talking about Doge? Is that what you're talking about?
No, I'm just saying a lot of people that I've dealt with on the security side, I think were geniuses, doctors, and all those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Their Achilles heel is they think they're that smart on everything.
Right.
And they're not. I mean, can you ever see more worse traders than doctors?
No.
I mean, and they're all genius. They're all smarter than
right,
I am, for sure.
Smart. Right, they're all smart.
But they think that, you know, one carries over to the other.
Yeah. And, no, I hear. We're about to find out, you know.
Yeah, well, I just hope that we have our group hangs together here and we all have a really good year and everybody stays healthy, gets healthy, stays healthy. You know, we had a good year this year. I mean, a couple of people had some problems along the way, but I think some progress is being made.
Yeah.
It appears to be.
Right.
And it was a pretty good year for investors. I was about 3 years early on the gold, but I actually made some money on it this year for people. It's always nice to be 3 years early, Kenny.
What?
It's always nice to be 3 years early, but.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm going to say that's the bane of people who watch the market a lot. You're always early. You see stuff that other people don't see, and then it doesn't happen for a while, right? That's just the way it is. But anyway, we'll talk at you next week, buddy. Are you anywhere, any more trips from down the end of the year?
I actually have to go to Boston next week because I'm going to speak at a Fidelity conference up in Boston on the 12th. So I got to go up there on the 11th. And then
some good weather there.
The next week I'm going back to New York because I'm launching my podcast on Yahoo, so I got to shoot the we got to do the pilot.
Oh, good for you!
The pilot podcast is, you know, make sure it's all the way we want it to be and all that stuff. So it'll launch actually in January.
Well, good for you, Bubba. We'll see you next Tuesday.
Yep, you will.
All right, bud. S&P futures up 2, NASDAQ futures down 7. Be right back, Professor Hal Snar.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains, think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Good morning.
Give us a call about your stock. 888-76-JACKS. That's 888-765-6257. Or email us stocksandjacks@live.com.
Hello,
welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Ricky on the board. S&P up 2. NASDAQ futures down 9. God, Ricky, you got me crazy. Who did that? I've heard that a million times. Who was that song?
Little Richard.
Little Richard. There you go.
That's right.
Do we have the professor?
Hey, good morning, Tom.
Hi, how are you, bud?
Doing well. We had a great week in New York, and we got back to North Carolina like early in the a.m. on Sunday. So, and then I put together a bunch of stuff. You know, we moved into a new house, so I had to put together a gas grill and some furniture, and I did that all day Sunday without any sleep whatsoever.
how long are you in this house? 6 months? You guys are the traveling men.
Well, we moved down to North Carolina August 20th-ish. We lived in a temporary apartment for a couple months, and we closed on this house November 12th. So we've been in this house since the 12th of November.
So you guys are by the coast. You're not where all the problems are on the western edge, right?
Oh, no. The hurricane came through here with just a little bit of rain, but you're reminded of what happened every time you jump on the interstate 40, 85.
Yeah.
Because they still have that electronic billboard up saying there's no, you can't use the interstate to Tennessee. You have to go these side U.S. highways. So you're reminded of that damage every time you get on the highway.
I thought they had one lane open in each direction now or something.
Well, the last time I was on the interstate, well, that was a week before Christmas. The last time I was on that interstate headed toward Greensboro, it said Interstate 40 still out.
Oh, okay.
But they might have gotten open. I mean, I'm not sure how they would have done it that quickly because...
Well, they're going to put one lane in the... They're going to fix the good side and have that one lane each way, I think, is what they're going to do.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, from what I saw, it looked like the whole thing was out, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, well, yeah, the one side in some areas is just gone. So, yeah, that's going to be a while. But I think
maybe you're right. Maybe they have one lane in each direction, like when they do the road construction, right?
Yeah, they did something on the other side. I think that was the plan on whether that's done or not. I don't know. But that's at least you'd have somebody. I don't think they were letting trucks through either, just cars.
Yeah.
Last I heard. Anyway, I was just keeping track on it a little bit because we had my buddy Bill Moriarty was on. Maybe one of these days he'll come back on and give us kind of a progress report because these are those guys that do that stuff. But it looked like one place, the whole side of the mountain where the thing was gone. So I don't know how you're going to put something there.
Yeah, like erased, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
That happens in Idaho a lot normally. You know, when you're driving up from Boise to Lewiston, Idaho, you have those, US 91, 95 is a whiny, twisty river or highway.
Yeah.
Usually one lane in each direction. And there were several times in the 1990s when I'd go home from, wherever I was stationed, I had to drive through Boise. And you get to some point in the river, right there at the base of a mountain that went straight up, and there was a rock slide. And they would build the a temporary road kind of out into the river and then back onto the highway because the landslide just came down. And
yeah.
And I was just like, what we think is, what we think of it as a constant, as what we think of as solid, it's not. Like the Earth is constantly moving, and we don't even know it really, right? Like the continent is actually moving that we're standing on.
Oh, yeah.
Yet we don't know. Yeah.
Well, they claim 250 million years to all get back together again. I don't think we're going to be here.
Over a long enough time horizon, everything is variable, right? On Twitter, I posted something about a guy was really slamming fossil fuels. And I said, well, you know, before fossil fuels, trees were the number one source of power for people's homes. And the whole eastern seaboard was deforested.
Yeah, the whole north, a lot of the north woods in Wisconsin was too.
Yeah, they just it was just all cut down, and then the number one source of light at night was whale oil. So if it wasn't for the invention of, you know, if it wasn't for the discovery of crude oil in Pennsylvania, I mean, what I think, you know,
wouldn't be whales left.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, carbon fuels might not be the best thing to have right now, but it's a lot better than the alternative. And then if you think about this, in the 1880s, at some point in New York City, 40 horses died in the street and were left to rot. And then can you imagine the urine and the poo smells that were coming out of New York City? So, I mean, the alternative is much worse. And, you know, in 40 years, maybe we'll be using helium-3 cars, or helium-3 will be our number one source of energy. And you know, but here's the funny thing. This is what I said, too. Over the long, long run, as John Maynard Keynes said, we're all dead, and you know, the Earth is going to be swallowed by the sun. So will it really matter? In a few billion
years? Well, yeah, it's you know, people get all charged up about this stuff, and I'm just at the camp that, you know, there are places that have incredible amount of renewal stuff. Those places should have it because it's. I think it would be. You know, it would certainly make sense. I have no idea why right next to Hoover Dam is the flattest valley with nothing but sun, and you wouldn't have scorpion can't live out there. Why there isn't, you know, 50,000 solar collectors when you got the power lines right there? I have no idea. That makes a lot more sense than putting them on somebody's roof in Alaska, I think. But you know, I mean, we whatever common sense there should be along with this stuff, I don't necessarily see it.
I mean, I don't think any policy that comes out of the government has much common sense in it whatsoever.
No,
our number one source of power should be nuclear. I mean, it's zero emission. They know how to store it for the long run. They built these concrete tunnels in the mountains of Nevada, like 7,000 feet above the water table. You can store it in there. My uncle Steve was driving trucks in there during the construction of that, and I don't think they ever let any nuclear waste in that facility. They spent all that money, and I don't think there's any nuclear waste in there. There may be now, but at the time, a few years ago, there wasn't any. They were, you know, completely blocking it. And that should be our number one source of power. And the funny thing is, I think it's going to be because all these data centers, these AI companies, they need power. And solar and wind are not the solution. So the big tech companies who have a lot of sway in Democratic circles are going to be lobbying them for licenses. So I think the new wave of energy in the United States will be nuclear.
I mean, the same tech guys that are running down to Mar-a-Lago to kiss Trump's ass?
Yeah. I mean, I was listening to this the show a little bit on the website before, you know, I jumped on. And I think what's going on now is Trump got his butt kicked during his first term. With a lot of the never Trumper, I support you, Trump kind of thing, and the federal workers were obviously set against him. I think this time he's privately funding his transition team, and he's making sure that the people that he picks are gonna execute his plan. And I think, you know, all these threats of tariffs are just a way to get, you know, foreign leaders to be on board with his policies that he wants to implement.
So, well, I mean, if you hope for success, or if you like the guy, you would hope that there's a method to the madness.
I think there is.
I think at some point, though, that personality, you know, when you start, a lot of people don't really like to be bullied and don't want to be bullied.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing. I mean, you know, whatever. I wish him all the success there is. I just. The idea of the FBI guy talking about they're going to root out the people that are un-American or something, it sounds a lot like Gene McCarthy, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think
you got to be careful what you say. I mean, I think you
do. Yeah, but you know what? I think the left, the only police force that the left appears to like is the FBI because it's tilted toward them. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious.
Well, I mean, the right says like that. The right says that all the time. I mean, does that make it correct? I don't know.
Well, but what I'm saying is they don't like the local police. I think that's pretty obvious, right? I think they've had to moderate those views. They wanted to defund all these police forces throughout the United States.
The few people that have done that.
And the only police force that they seem to like is the FBI, because maybe the FBI does its bidding. And why would you be so in favor of the FBI? Wait a minute.
Who's the they?
The left. I mean, who's it's pretty obvious that they like the
but
FBI.
But who's the left?
Progressives. They love the FBI.
Okay, but then,
come on, Tom. You know that.
Well, some people think that I lean left. I'm not a progressive.
Yeah.
I mean, that whole...
I'm talking about, I view
that part of the Democratic Party the same way as I view the hate mongers in the Republican Party. Both 10% on each side could slide off as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never agreed with any of the people that want to defund the police and those kinds of things. Do I want an efficient police force? I mean, hell, my dad was a policeman. My uncle was a policeman. My grandfather was a policeman. And a lot of guys I played ball with and you know, have dinner with every Sunday are policemen. It's a great group, but does that mean I think the Chicago Police Department is well-run? No, I don't think that at all. I think these guys would be much happier and better served with some better leadership. That doesn't mean I want to defund them.
I'm talking about just in general. Over the last 8 or so years, people on the left, the ones that, you know, set the policies, it was pretty obvious that they were anti-blue, right? It was pretty obvious. And the Republicans were pro-blue, right? I'm not saying that's good or bad position. I'm just observing it from my vantage point.
Well, and my view is the truth is always the middle. My view the truth is always the middle.
Police forces should be privatized.
Well,
I think they should be privatized.
I don't
think you get much better outcomes if they're privatized.
I don't. I mean, there's some things I think the government has to do, and that's one of them. I'd privatize a lot of the other stuff.
I don't think the government's capable of doing a lot of these things very well, and I think it's pretty obvious from that, right? The leadership is in a lot of these places is corrupt.
I think you can't really. You can't really generalize like that. I mean, I think Chicago has Illinois. For whatever crazy reason, has like more municipalities by far than any other state in the country. I don't know if you knew that or not, but I mean, even the Chicago area, there's got to be 50 municipalities in what the city probably could just annex. I'm not saying they should. I don't think anybody would like it, but when you see like in Indianapolis, when they put the big, what do they call them, the circumferentials, the big interstate ribbon around the city. Indianapolis just annexed the whole area, so it's all Indianapolis. Did you ever drive into Oklahoma City?
Nope, never been to Oklahoma City.
I bought this truck down, and I want to come back like the old Route 66 way, so I'm driving up to Oklahoma City, and it's like, you know, of course I leave at like 4 in the morning before anybody else is up. I see this sign, Hal, you are entering Oklahoma City. I looked around, there's nothing there.
Sounds like Denver.
There's nothing there. I must have drove another 20 minutes before I even saw a house. They have annexed the city out so far, it could be 200 years from now. You'll be in Oklahoma City if the place triples in size.
Well, you know, maybe in 20 years that'll be the case.
Well, but I'm saying Denver, here in Chicago, you can go to Hickory Hills, you can go to Orland, and you're going to find government that absolutely works. You're going to find a police force that really does their job. The fire department is right there whenever you need them. It's not like every place is screwed up.
Well, I'm just saying that I personally believe the police force should be privatized. And I think the biggest mistake that we've done is given government officials qualified immunity. I think if you're a public official, then you should be held to a higher level of standard than a lower one. So I think that qualified immunity, if anything, that should be eroded. Right, you're a public official. You've been hired to safeguard the public, whether you're in the executive branch or whether you're a police officer, and you shouldn't have special immunity from prosecution. That's all.
I'm not so sure. Who does? But the president.
No, police officers.
You don't see that here.
Members of the executive branch of state governments have qualified immunity.
You sure don't see that in police guys here. They do anything, they're getting sued.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe what you don't see is what would have happened if they didn't have that immunity, right?
Well, I mean, I think that there are some police forces in the country that are actually very, very good. And, you know, I think Chicago used to be. Yeah. And I think there's an awful lot of people on there that are really good.
I'm not denigrating the people that, you know, are good and, you know, doing their job and doing it well. I'm not saying that. What I'm talking about is the leadership. And it's just like the public school system, right? I don't think we should have public schools. I think if we're going to do any of the money that these public schools get, is we do like what we do in Sweden, what they do in Sweden. They take the big pie of money, they split it up, and they give every person, every family in Sweden, a voucher or a check. And then they can use that to purchase whatever public school service they want. And, you know, that 50% of the schools are private, 50% of them are public. The public schools have to compete against the private schools. They're not just being handed money from the state, where they're accountable only to the governor. They're accountable to the parents. They want to provide great quality education.
Well, how we got to the point here? By the way, I was first grade. I went to school in Canada, of all places. And Canada has the same sort of deal.
That was a long commute, huh?
Okay, well, yeah.
It was a long commute.
Long commute, uphill both ways, right against the wind. But the if you have a Catholic school or any other kind of private school, the money that chases you, same thing is sort of happening here in the charter schools, by the way. The money that chases you into the public school chases to the Catholic school. The idea, I mean, it's totally appears a U.S. idea that we're going to pay for public education as a goal. Yet if you don't go to our school, you don't get a dime. I mean, I don't think anywhere else in the world is like that I know of. I mean, maybe there is, but yeah. But the idea that if you go to a Catholic grammar school, you don't get a nickel of public money is crazy, I think. I mean, provided the place is qualified and they produce kids that learn what they're supposed to learn, why don't they get any of the money? It's crazy to me. The difference in cost between... I know a gentleman who's high up on the boards in one of the schools here in the city, a Catholic school. I'd say the name, but everybody knows the name. They always have a good football team. And I think he told me, now this is a couple years ago, maybe a year ago, that the full cost of putting somebody through the place was like $17,500. That's including the building and everything. They charge tuition about $14,000 because, you know, a lot of kids can't pay it. And they have some kids that can't pay that. But so the endowment and raising money and all that stuff essentially tries to cover the three. Now, that includes the building work. Now, I believe in the city of Chicago, if you're a high school student, wherever you go, something like 22 to 24 follows you. And that doesn't include money spent on a building. So they're like 50% higher plus the building, and I don't know that they're doing as good a job. Matter of fact, granted, the person who goes to the other school and whose parents are paying come from a different family life, family background than somebody who, you know, just shows up and the family might be all busted up and God only knows. So there is a difference there. You can't. It's not like apples and oranges or apples and apples. But simple fact is, it's incredibly inefficient. A charter school, I think, here the same way. I don't know if you know this. Charter school gets the same amount of money, but the people who, like, if you and I started a charter school, I think the building's on us.
Yeah.
So we have to provide, you know, the plant and equipment, for lack of a better term. But the 22 or 24 grand, if we have, you know, 50 high school kids, we're going to get 50 times 22 grand for when the kid shows up, which is still more than a lot of the Catholic schools are. Now, but the overhead, and I've said this a bunch of times, at St. John Fisher, when I went to grammar school, Irish people were good for one thing. We had a lot of kids. Irish people are good for a lot of things. Maybe half Irish, I hope we are. But we had 1,600 kids in the school. You know, imagine it? Mm-hmm. In a square mile.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, holy. And when there was a golf course in a square mile. So every class had four classes of at least 40 people, right? So then he had two kindergartens. So that's 32 plus two. He had 34 teachers. He had a principal, an assistant, a music teacher, and two janitors. So there were 34 direct, five indirect. And if somebody called in sick, you knew they were half dead, and the principal came and taught class. So that was not a so that was not an easy day for you if your teacher didn't show up. You didn't want that because you got the principal in there talking at you. And she was one strict nun. So I mean, you compare that to, I think, University of California, I think it's 10 indirect for every professor.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not on the same planet in terms of efficiency.
Yeah.
Now, granted, the parents were a big help. You know, if anybody called home, you know, it was a kiss of death for the kid. It was a whole different world. You didn't need... Maybe you did
also,
need...
Also, the teachers probably lived in the neighborhood, too, right?
They all lived around there, so, you know, the old man worked, and...
Those interactions at the grocery store, at church, they work.
But, I mean, they would work. Walk home with their kids for lunch. You know, nobody... I mean, out of 1,600 kids, I think they had 20 people that stayed for lunch. They didn't want anybody staying for lunch. They didn't have a cafeteria, they didn't have anything. I mean, you had to bring your lunch, and they had, you know, they brought in, like, 20 things of milk for the kids who... Maybe you know, maybe the mother died or something. But every time my mom had to do something, one of the neighbors, we just went there. I mean, the women all covered it. I mean, okay, yeah. Mrs. something something, Mrs. Smith has to go somewhere. Okay, we had four more kids at our lunch table. I mean, the world doesn't work like that anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah, it doesn't.
But, you know, that's why some people are wanting to move back in those kinds of neighborhoods. But this whole thing with this valuation, the reason why... You know, I mean, I love it when the market goes up because my people make money. But I'm always very wary because I know when, if it ever corrects severely, people lose more on the way down than they made on the way up. Because there's always record margin at the top, right? I mean, look at in the last month, every night we go up, which means mutual fund buying. People are just pouring money in. It can't go down. I look at some of these valuations, and is there any chance, Al, that we can grow into this where for the next 5 years inflation is going to be 2% and people are going to get 3.5% or 4% rise in wages? The Fed's already, this is now 4 months in a row, over 5% money supply growth. What the bleep are they doing? Are they that owned by the rich people that they just got to keep this going?
Yeah, one of the problems with, you know, people jumping in now and buying is that if the stock market has a 20% correction, they're the first ones to sell, and their wealth evaporates, right? And on every transaction, there's two sides, the seller and the buyer. So guess who's buying those stocks in the panic, right?
Yeah. Well, when we get back, let's some of the things that haven't changed, and you probably know this, but just think for a second on what happens if you did buy, you know, if you plunked, you know, 200 grand. You've been out of the market the whole time. All of a sudden, you plunk 200 grand in NVIDIA because everybody on TV tells you to buy it. And all of a sudden, the thing drops by 20%. What is it that you can do? It's pretty scary. S&P futures up 175. NASDAQ futures down 12. A little bit of a nothing there this morning so far. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our Better Business Bureau A-rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Call now for a free case review and a low price guaranteed quote to get you protected today. Call now. 800-388-4901. That's 800-388-4901. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-388-4901.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello, everyone. Back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamara Ricky on the board. SP futures up 2, NASDAQ futures down 12, Dow futures down 6. So we got a sleepy morning here so far. Not so kind of around the rest of the world. We got some rallies going around other places. Maybe they're catching up. DAX up 46.2%. They were up yesterday, too, as well. FTSE up 72.9%. They were up 1% a little while ago. Those are down a little bit, but everybody's still up. CAC round up 32.4%. So we're bullish around the world. Around the world, Nikkei up 735, 39,249, trying to make a run at 40,000 again. Hang Seng up 196, 1%, 19,746. Looks like it's heading for 20,000, maybe. Shanghai up 14.4%, 33.79. Yesterday, the NASDAQ, the big seven, was to the, off to the races. The NASDAQ was up 185. That's a full 1%. S&P up 14.2%. Dow was actually down a little, down 128.3%. Bonds. S&P, we were up a little bit on the interest rates before. Now we're not. We're unchanged, 4.20. Same thing with the Bund, 2.05. Same thing with Japan. So we were, interest rates were going up. Now they're not. All in the last hour. We've got oil up $1.04, but still 69.14. Under 70 bucks. Brent up $1.02, 72.85. Natural gas down 8 cents, 3.12. Arbob up 2 cents, 194. We've got gold bouncing a little bit. We're up 840, 2666. Silver up 43 cents. It's 1.5%, 31.30. Copper up 4 cents, 4.17. We tried to buy, get longer gold yesterday, and we didn't get it. We're being a little on the cheap. Maybe we should have paid up. Euro, unchanged, 105. British pound, unchanged, 126. Crypto, down 1,400, 94,437. Pulling back a little bit. It made a run at 100,000, almost got there. Now it's pulled back about 5. We'll see what direction that goes. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:35 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 19 degrees right now with a high of 31. Chilly with clouds and sunshine. Tonight will be partly cloudy and breezy with a low of 25 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 53 degrees right now with a high of 82. Mostly sunny and warm with the temperature breaking the record of 81 set in 1940. Tonight will be partly cloudy with a low of 50. Traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, 15 minutes. We're looking at about 69 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 46 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 27 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 44 minutes. Lastly, sports. NFL Week 14 is on the way Thursday, December 5th. We have Packers at Lions at 7:15 p.m. And the Sunday, December 8th, we have Seahawks at Cardinals, 3:05 p.m. And the Bears at 49ers, 3:25 p.m. NBA yesterday, the Bulls beat the Nets, 128-102. And today we have the Spurs at Suns, 8 p.m. Lastly, NHL Blackhawks lose to Maple Leafs, 1-4. Back over to you, Chief.
So, Carl, if you had to describe the Bulls' style on offense and defense, it would be allergic to leather on offense and Olé on defense.
Yeah, they don't play defense like they used to, that's for sure.
They don't play it at all. You ever heard the term allergic to leather?
I haven't heard that term.
It means as soon as you get the ball in your hand, you shoot. So we say a guy,
well,
if you don't want to say a guy shoots too much, you say he's a little allergic to leather.
Can you imagine what Michael Jordan would do in today's game?
Well,
I think he'd be averaging probably 40 or 50.
Yeah, they would. He'd actually use some mid-range stuff. There's never anybody guarding you in there once you go in. It's either a layup or a three-pointer.
Well, I mean, think about the typical game in the NBA. You have four guys standing outside the three-point line.
Yeah.
One guy drives into an empty key and kicks it out to the open shooter, and they shoot. It's such a bad game. I can't watch
it. It's horrible.
I can't do it.
Yeah, it's absolutely horrible. Hey, you know, it's funny with
the WNBA with Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, it's a better game.
Oh, it's better basketball for sure.
Better game. Yeah.
You know, it's funny when you look at this with all the hooting and howling and bleeding and stuff and regulations and everything. You know what is one of the most sacred? And I don't know if they have to waterboard somebody the minute you get into politics or something. You know what? Which is never. We just were talked about. If you bought the market now, and you were wrong, you know, it'd be kind of tough. One thing that has not changed in the many years, decades that I've been in the business, the amount of money you can deduct a capital loss against your current income has stayed $3,000. And when I started in the business, the Dow was 800. And now the Dow is, where the hell is it, 40,000 or something? 46,000?
Those losses are capped at
3,000.
Wow.
Per year. So if you took your latest bonus check and put $200,000 in NVIDIA, and the thing dropped 50%, you got a $100,000 loss. You better live 33, bud. 33 years.
Yeah. Well, my mother-in-law, who's a nurse, she was talking to a friend of hers, and her friend had put, like, I don't know, $500 in just an S&P 500, no load, real low fee kind of fund, right? She's put $500 away in that for like 20, 30 years. And my mother, you know, she, mother-in-law, I love her to death, but, you know, she put money into like a stock, and it, the stock market collapsed 20% and she sold. And I think most people are, you know, most just average people, you know, get hoodwinked into buying this stuff at the peak when it's nice and frothy. And then when it collapses, they panic and sell. And I told my mother, that was the last thing. I think I remember her talking about it too. And I go, Mom, I think it was that 20% correction just after the financial crisis in 2009. And I go, Mom, that's the last thing you want to do is sell, because in a year you'll be up. But, you know, I think a lot of just everyday average people who work, you know, 12 hours a day or 8 hours a day, whatever they do, you know, whether they're working three day nursing shifts or 5 day 8 hour shifts, you know, they got their kids and people say, hey, bye, it's great, never been better. They put the money down and then it crashes and they're left holding nothing, man.
Well, there's
and you know, there's some guy who's buying all that stuff, right?
Well, there's a phenomenon. I mean, you never exactly know when it's down 10%. Whether right now it's absolutely a buy to dip, but I've been around times when another 20% down, you know, so it's not like it can't happen. But there's a psychology to it, and my brother was, you know, doesn't come on the show very often, but he's the first one that picked it up, because you know, obviously we both deal pretty closely with the clients, but right now it's an odd psychology in my opinion. And I you know, I talk to people a lot, as you could probably tell. I meet with a bunch of guys that are judges and attorneys and stuff all the time, and you know what's kind of weird, you know, is say they needed, well, the number used to be when you first had 401ks and IRAs, it's going to sound like a lot, but it's not anymore. If you amassed $1 million, you and your wife, through retirement, okay, through your 401k and your IRA, and you plunked it here at PTI and we were protected or something, or you put it in, we didn't even have to protect it. I mean, the deal was, when all this came out, that the risk-free rate was going to be 3.5%, 4%, okay?
Yeah.
And for a long time, it was zero. So you have people in the markets that probably, I won't say shouldn't be, because the market's gone up and they've gotten away with it, traditionally wouldn't have been to that extent. So, but now you have people, so because a million, think back 15 years. $1 million, if you put it in a savings and loan or someplace, I'm going to show my age, it's 35 grand you made risk free, right?
Yeah.
Now you're making, between the Debodias, you're going to be making 35, 40, 45 on Social Security. So you're talking 75 grand a year, 80 grand a year. And now the house is paid for. So the 80 grand a year is more than enough to keep up on most of the repairs, get you a new car every 4 or 5 years, you're good to go, right? You can take a trip every year. That was the American retirement dream. You weren't rich, but you were very comfortable, right?
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden, oh no, you're not making any money on your income stuff. Oh, by the way, the house that you think 85 grand a year is enough to deal with, by the way, if you roof it, you need a roof, it's 40 grand. You're like, what do you mean 40 grand for a roof? What do you mean 80 grand for a new car? I mean, all of a sudden, that's jumped on you. But the weird part is, some people that have been invested the whole way and didn't invest in the stocks that clunk, because a lot of them did, Sears, General Motors, United Airlines, you know, we forget the ones that went out worthless, right? And Citigroup basically did too, right? They had the reverse split. But if you just were in the market and hung in there, now the person might have $2.5 million. Some people almost feel guilty about that, you know. And if the market were to peel off 20% and they only had $2 million, they're like, eh, you know, somebody was way up on the blackjack table. It's an odd attitude that I actually have had conversations with people where I say, you know, I got $2.5 million in my stuff, and you know, if the market goes down, I don't even care. I go, what do you mean you don't care? He said, well, it's, you know, I started with $1 million, now I got $2.5 million. I said, okay, but if we have a relationship and you plunked the $2.5 million at PTI, I think we started at 2.5. I don't want to lose from there. And the guy was, what are you talking about? It only cost me $1 million. We actually have this discussion now. How scary
I think part of it is people see the wild swings. They see the 20% drop, and then, you know, they realize inflation is eating away at their income. And I think it can kind of make a person a little cynical.
Well, they see the 20% drop, but in their investment lifetime, it's always come back. And yet, I know, and when I started in 1981,
I think people mostly pay attention to the bad news, right?
Right now, if you ask anybody what mistakes they made, they'll say that I sold at the wrong time. But to get back to what you asked about there, what happens is, if somebody absolutely needs $1.5 million to live on, and their account's $2 million, they're more panicky at $1.5 million because they're going, as my brother brought out, I can't live the way I want to live if I lose any more. So they're much more likely to sell at $1.5 million portfolio than they are at $2 million, which is exactly the opposite of what you want to be as a trader. You want to buy low and sell high, right? So what we try to do for people is have them protected in such a way that if it does go from the market were to go from two to their stocks go from $2 million to $1.5 million, we're not going to make every dime of it back. But suppose we cover $300,000-$400,000 of that by being protected. Now you can be a buyer at $1.5 million, where we normally would have been at $1.5 million than before. That's the strategy we try and do for people. And so you are
maybe $1.5 million. The amount that they can pull out each month squeezes their budget too much.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So it's the psychology is a little different than what normally, like a working person like you who's in the middle of making money, you're in your wealth expansion phase. It's hard for you to understand the psychology of somebody who's not working anymore. It's a little different.
I'm in the kids squeeze your wealth expansion.
Phase. Well, that's. Isn't that the truth? Is it possible to make enough money to send kids to college and grad school and still have some left? How the hell do you make that much?
Well, I'm hoping I go to school while I'm teaching them. That way they don't have to pay for tuition.
Well, some schools are real big on that. Some aren't. One of my friends, my best friends, she worked for the University of St. Louis. And everybody got to go to school there for nothing. Even her husband went to grad program, and when she went to work for Michigan, I don't think they gave you a dime.
Yeah,
I'm not. I think.
Well, I'm hoping they want to go to a state school, or the university I'm happening to teach at, or maybe they want to go to a school where they can live in our rental property in Utah for nothing, or they live at home for nothing. That's what I'm kind of hoping, because really
maybe they want to go to Northwestern and pay $80,000 with you paying another $17,000 for room and board. Maybe they want to do that.
Yeah, I think they might have to finance that themselves.
might have to find the new pops for that.
Yeah.
My
wife sells some books, unless she sells some books, they're going to have to economize. What? I think when it comes to undergraduate degrees, honestly, if you go to undergraduate school that is inexpensive, the teachers are pretty good, and you work your butt off and you learn a lot and you actually write your own stuff and you actually do your own homework and you have a 4.0 and maybe you publish a few things, I think you're setting yourself up for success. And you know, if the ultimate thing is to go to graduate school, you know, what really is the difference between UNC Chapel Hill and Dartmouth? I don't see the difference, honestly. Other than the amount of tuition you pay.
Well, the difference is the people you're supposed to meet.
Yeah.
And the you know, the camaraderie that you get. I mean, there's I went to Notre Dame, University of Chicago. One was grad school. I don't know a soul from University of Chicago. I mean, I was working weekends. I drove over there. I went to a class, went and played basketball for 2 hours, went to another class, came home, or went to the library for a while. You know, it was totally different than Notre Dame, where I have all kinds of friends.
You didn't go to Milton's house?
I did who?
You didn't hang out with Milton at his home?
Whenever the guy was talking, I went to listen. And I had him for class once or twice. I can't remember. I know I had George Stigler twice. George Stewart was fascinating. I actually liked him better than Milton Friedman. I'm more of a behavioral economist. You'd be the only guy in the world that would like, if I can find it, I'll gift it to you
You know how I study for my core exams, right? I wrote a proof book. I had all these proofs for the econometrics, which is just, you know, linear algebra. Statistics at that level is just all linear algebra. And then I had all these micro and macro theorems. I just wrote this big proof book, all the math that you need to know for my program. I mean, I loved it. It was so much fun. That's what I did to study for those exams. I did this basically, you know, show all the steps of every proof that we could talk about in a year, right? That's how I studied. So that stuff was a lot of fun to me. I enjoyed it.
Well,
I probably would like Milton.
Well, the course I took from him, I think it was I have the book, The Economics of Supply or something. It was all about supply curves and all that stuff. And the book wasn't even a book. He had written it, but it was a manuscript. First day of class, he says, well, you know, I got so bored with it, I never finished it. Okay, then. But, I mean, every chart in there, you know, supply graph, there'd be like 40 graphs in the graph. You know, all of the different calculus in the bottom. But even he was bored with the crap. So you could knock him off topic to talk about politics or anything easily, right? You never wanted to ask the guy a question because he'd be doing some calculus thing up there and showing you how the supply curve and is adding this and that and that, you know, stuff. So somebody would ask a question that would, you know, because he didn't understand what he was saying in the first place. Oh, yeah. They'd launch you to make then his answer would be even more complicated. Finally, you got to the point where you're never going to ask the guy anything because it got worse, not better. But it came down to the exam would be, exam was something like there's an article regarding something happened to the population regarding, was it Time Magazine or something? There was a Time Magazine article about something happened to some company and it was going to a cost shift. Follow this through stock and flow for everybody who's involved, you know, society, the government. I mean, every little thing you did, you were supposed to think forward everywhere it went, all the little worms that you let loose, where they were going to end up.
If there are 40 people in that class, there's probably 40 different answers.
It's funny you should mention that. It was one of the only classes I took that they had like a big classroom. It wasn't big like Notre Dame big, but it was maybe 100 people. And University of Chicago had a shtick where you could audit classes over. I mean, nobody ever did in business, so you just wanted out because you were paying for them, right? But in the economics school, people would audit a class and then for a year and then maybe go a second time before they tried to get a grade. Plus, if you made it halfway through, you got your first exam and you looked at it and you go, I can't do this one. you could withdraw. You could take a W. And, you got half your tuition back and it didn't count against you. So.
Well, you know, in my micro theory 2 class in my PhD program, I got the final and I read through the whole exam and I said, I can't answer any of these questions. And then I read it again and I read it again and I read it again. About the fifth time through, I was able to answer the A parts. It was like a 6 question test with parts A through F. And I was able to answer all the A parts. And then I read it again, then I answered some B parts. And then the next thing you know, I answer the whole test, and I got 120 on it, and the nearest person to me got a 40.
Wow.
Because I think most people just got discouraged. I just kept reading the thing. I'll keep reading the thing until my mind relaxes and I chill out. So I read the thing like five times.
8 cups of coffee later, and you're good to go. 8 cups of coffee.
Yeah, I mean, I literally would just not give up. I would not give up, and I just... And the previous year, the high was like a 30 on that test. I just never gave up. I just said, I'm going to figure it out.
Well, Melty, this was a two-quarter thing. So I took the second quarter. Of course, I went to see the guy. I very, very seldom went to see a teacher. I said, you know, professor, I didn't take the first part, but I wouldn't mind taking the second half. Or are they sort of separate? Oh, yeah, same thing. No, they're totally different. Blah, blah, blah. Okay. That was about my 30-second interview with Uncle Melty. Sure enough... When he gives the finals out, he goes, this will cover both quarters. I didn't even have the first quarter. And then, like I said, there's like 100 people there showed up every day. I come into the final, there's maybe 20 people there, and I'm going. Because everybody else just looked at take-home and said, I'm not doing it. Withdrew.
Oh, man.
And I'm sitting there going, And he's sitting in front of us with big red pens going through everybody's take home. And all I could think of, that was my take home. He was slashing the smithereen. Anyway, I ended up with a hook. I had three A's and a hook that quarter. I didn't make the dean's list.
Oh, man.
You guys still call C's a hook? Or now is a C's like an F, but not, back then it wasn't.
Well, yeah, in graduate school, you have to have a C or higher. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, but they don't...
But yeah. Graduate school, the grades are so subjective. I mean, you get a professor who rolls out a new set of assignments or something, and, you know, pretty stable for like 10 years, and all of a sudden there's this new material, and... And the it's never the same kind of talent from year to year, so you need to have people who are able to teach the principles courses, because that's what graduate students do, and that's probably why the econ majors would audit the course, because you know they're being paid to probably either be a research assistant or they're teaching, which means they're on scholarship and they're getting a stipend.
Could be.
Well, and so they're dragging out their PhD, by auditing the courses, right? So unlike a business student getting an MBA, you don't have those advantages. So you take the class once, right?
Well, the University of Chicago was such an odd place. I mean, business students, they wanted to pay their money and get the hell out of there, right?
Yeah.
Everybody else was not like that at all.
Economists are a different group.
Oh, without a doubt. And so the first day I show up, everybody, they paid your medical stuff, right? So for the 2 years you were there.
Yeah, we had health insurance. That's when I started using my dental insurance. Every 6 months from the time I went to graduate school at Idaho State University with my dental insurance, I got my teeth cleaned twice a year.
Wow. Well, so there's there weren't a whole lot of...
Nonstop, twice a year since graduate school at Idaho State University in the late 1990s.
Well, Chicago was not exactly the hotbed in those days of potential dates. Did I put that nicely? Well, yeah. I'm sitting.
Well, in math departments, that there wasn't a lot of options in the math department either.
So this girl, actually, she's fairly attractive, and we're there for our physicals. I start talking to her, and things are going pretty good for an initial conversation, and I go, so, what's your what's the stupidest line ever? What's your major? So I give her the what's your major line. She goes, I'm Southeastern Asian religions majoring in Sanskrit. And I go, really? And she goes, what about you? And I said, well, I'm in the MBA program. That was the end of that conversation. I was one of those guys. I was there only for the... That was it. She wouldn't talk to me anymore.
Yeah. MBA's not considered... intellectual pursuit, right?
No, we were definitely just there for the scratch or something. But I almost wish I didn't start when I did. It's how I've seen this go the other way. Nobody even has an idea that this all can change. That Walmart could be valued at 18 again, PE.
Yeah.
And it's not, that's not a horrible price for a retailer, unless... Unless these, the biggest companies are just going to be the only things left that can charge whatever they want. I mean, clearly, yeah. Home Depot can charge whatever they feel like. I mean, Microsoft obviously can. I mean, you can't buy software anymore. They'll only rent it to you. Yeah. I mean, they've out of all the monopolists out there, they could be the worst in my mind. And nobody's even. And what are those guys? They're over ten times revenue for a firm that big. How the hell can Microsoft double?
Well, I mean. There are options, though. I mean, if you don't like paying the Microsoft Office licensing fee, you can do Google Sheets. It's not too bad.
You as an individual can, but if your entire company's been using it forever, that's a problem.
That's true. Yeah.
I'm saying. I'm trying to think up reasons why these stocks are a buy here, and I'm just coming up short. Other than the fact that money's pouring into the system.
It's going to be a wild, I think, year. Honestly, because if things go like Trump wants them to go, and Canada and Mexico and the BRICS nations all comply with what he wants, and the European nations bring down their tariffs, things can be really good, I think.
Well, I don't... But the idea about the BRIC, the out peep yesterday about He's gonna put. He's gonna put. Who do you think's causing it? He's the guy who poured 40% more dollars into the system when he was president, or 35, right? Yeah. Or 30. He's the reason why people want to have BRICS, because they can't trust us to keep the dollar at a current price.
Yeah, the Federal Reserve, yeah. The Federal Reserve is really...
When he's pointing fingers at people, he needs to point them right at himself. Yeah. I mean...
Well, I mean, I'm not judging whether I like or not his policies. What I'm saying is, if he can get these countries to be on his side, I think things can get really good.
Oh, I do too.
But if they say no, and he does slap tariffs on everybody, then it can get really bad.
The only way to make sure that you never have somebody with a competing currency is to manage your currency in such a way where it's a storehouse of value. And we haven't done that for 20 years. We haven't done that for... What if you're... And I suppose nobody cares. Probably half of them are dead now. But suppose for a long period of time, hell, you know this, the biggest storehold of value in like Russia and other places was the $100 bill from the U.S. So if you slaved away to get five of those $100 bills in 2008, what are they worth now? Half of that?
Yeah.
I mean, our currency is not
a store. Yeah, we got to solve this.
I mean, we're our own enemy here.
Yeah. We got to solve this debt issue that we have. And we have to change the Fed. We have to say to the Fed, look, your only job is to maintain nice steady growth in M2, right? I mean, that's the best we're going to get out of the Fed. That's the best policy. That's not the policy I want, but it's the best policy we're going to get out of the Fed.
But if you do that, we have two political parties with two contrasting styles. Yeah. By the way, they get you the exact same place. The Republicans always want to, well, now who's Republican, who's Democrat these days? I mean, it seems all weird, but...
Well, you got to tell the Republicans and Democrats, you got to grow up, quit being children, right?
Well, but the Republicans always want to cut taxes.
Yeah.
But don't have the balls or the power to cut spending enough to make that even out. And the Democrats always want to give money to people to curry favor, right?
And they both love the tax cuts.
But they won't raise taxes enough to cover it. So who's ever in there gets you to the same place, more debt, right? I mean, if he really wanted to do something with the federal government, Obama had the two old farts, Simpson Bulls.
Yeah.
All this Washwagi and Musk all have to do is walk in, pick up their report, and say, "Here it is."
Yeah,
it's right there. And how many people? But all this money goes to people. Hell, it's agricultural programs, it's this program, it's that program, it's a military program. It's not like the money isn't going out to people. It is, and every person thinks they deserve it.
Yeah,
I mean, right?
Well, I think you do two things. You tell the Fed, look, you're going to grow M2 at a nice steady pace. Republicans, Democrats, get on board, and then not lift the debt ceiling.
Yeah, but not lift the debt ceiling. Who's the he? The he has to turn. Not, but the he, who is the chairman of the Fed, has to turn around to Congress and the president and say, "You're on your own. If you're going to spend, raise taxes or borrow. I'm not helping you.
We're just growing M2 at population growth 1%. That's it.
That's a lot. That's a lot less than we're doing now, bud."
Yeah.
All right. Have a nice week. What? So you guys drove up and back?
Yeah, we rented a van and we brought some stuff. We rented one of these big passenger vans.
All right. Have
a big back area, and we brought a bunch of stuff down. I brought all my tools down.
Good for you, bud. All right, we'll talk at you next week. S&P futures up 2, NASDAQ futures down 8. Not much going on here. The rest of the world is bullish. We'll probably be bullish by the end of the day. Back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.